Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. For over 15 years, the IBM Center for the Business of Government has sought to connect research to practice, sponsoring third-party research on a broad range of public management issues facing us today. The public's trust in government continues to be at low levels, as measured in numerous surveys. This perception is shaped in part from stories about how federal agencies could have improved if leaders had taken the time to foresee and mitigate potential risks. Today, change is occurring that holds the potential to make government function better. It is a positive change. An increasing number of federal agencies have recognized the value of enterprise risk management and are taking actions to make ERM an important part of their operational model. An IBM Center report, Improving Government Decision-Making Through Enterprise Risk Management by Douglas Webster and Thomas Danton, describes the evolution of federal risk management approaches and highlights several federal agencies' experiences in adopting enterprise risk management. What is enterprise risk management? How can agencies successfully implement ERM? And what are some of the challenges they face in doing so? Today, we will explore these questions and so much more with Doug Webster and Tom Stanton, authors of the IBM Center report, Improving Government Decision-Making Through Enterprise Risk Management. Doug, Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There are various definitions of risk. So what is risk, and why is risk so often viewed as negative terms rather than, say, positive action?
Well, probably the most direct answer to that is that risk, if you look it up in the dictionary, is almost always couched in negative terms. So it's a threat, some vulnerability, and so on. And as a result, folks involved in risk management tend to look at, or not necessarily those only involved in risk management, but people that are impacted by risk management look at it in those terms. However, that's a very narrow context because you also need to consider what's the trade-offs, what's the rewards for going after various risks. And so ISO 31000, International Standard on Risk Management, defines risk as the uncertainty of objectives. Now, that is a different definition of risk, but that having been said, it's not consistent with the other definition if for the other definition you also include what are the risks and the rewards. The point is that both of those need to be considered jointly.
Mm-hmm. So as you point out in your report for the IBM Center and in your larger book that you both edited, a risk comes in many different dimensions. And the federal government has traditionally focused, and I know, Doug, you know this given your previous role as CFO at Labor, that it manages it focuses on managing financial risk. But now we're beginning to see the understanding of risk more comprehensively. I'd like to get a sense of if you can offer examples of external internal risks agencies or organizations face.
Well, I think first off, in terms of the breadth of risk, it certainly is focused on financial risks in certain types of agencies and in certain functional roles, such as you mentioned the financial role of a CFO. That having been said, I would suggest that risk across the federal government is certainly not historically limited to that. I mean, if one were to think of NASA as an agency, for example, they have all kinds of risks in achievement of their missions, but one would not naturally gravitate to financial risks there. In terms of internal versus external risks, the underlying principles of risk management are identical, but the context is different, meaning that internal risks that are typically risk to achieving some internal set of objectives, whether improving efficiency, effectiveness, et cetera, are things that the organization largely or generally has some significant degree of control over. External risks, on the other hand, you typically do not have an ability to control those risks. So while you may certainly impact the organization's ability to respond should that risk turn to an adverse event, you can't control the risk in the external environment. So that context is significantly different.
So Tom, you know, you just need to look at the newspaper headlines lately, and there are many classic examples of inadequate public and private sector risk management in recent decades. Why is it so imperative to consider the extent of possible risk up front? And could you highlight some of your examples of the common thread throughout these events?
It's imperative to consider major risks up front because the cost of remediating a risk early may be a lot less than if you wait. And until recently, I would have used the Veterans Administration the cost of remediating the Veterans Health Administration and reducing wait times would have been a lot less than suffering what both veterans and the VA suffered. Now, of course, we have the Office of Personnel Management and the abysmal failure to protect government workers against cybersecurity, against cyber threats. And that cost is immense. We haven't even gotten to the point where we know how many records were actually accessed. If somebody had done a decent job of cyber protection up front, we might have been able to avoid this. To give you a private sector example, I was the point person on governance and risk management for the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. Mm-hmm. And there you saw one major financial institution after another that simply failed to consider the risk of putting hundreds of billions of dollars, in many cases, of subprime mortgages on their books without reserving enough capital in case of a realistic assessment of losses. And the cost of that, compared to what it would have cost to deal with it up front, the cost of that to these institutions that blew themselves up, but also to us as a country, have been immense.
Mm-hmm. And Doug, would you highlight some of the compelling reasons for why the federal government should be adopting and is adopting enterprise risk management?
Well, to the degree that the federal government is already involved in risk management, and I would suggest every organization is involved in risk management in some fashion, it has traditionally and typically been within various functional stovepipes. So, for example, the chief financial officer certainly worries about getting a clean audit opinion. The CIO worries about cybersecurity, et cetera. However, when you manage risks within these functional silos and you don't come together collectively, you don't have an ability to prioritize at the overall enterprise level across those functional stovepipes. Moreover, you don't have the ability to identify cross-functional impacts where the CIO, for example, mitigating one risk may be creating unknowingly risks in other parts of the organization. You don't have the ability to prioritize resources across all of those. And finally, you are unable to develop that portfolio view of risk across the enterprise to ensure it's consistent with a risk appetite for that organization.
So when you do get to that, whether it's an OMB director or what have you, have the policy. And question, given your background, why doesn't policy readily translate into action?
Well, that's probably an age-old question that applies to not just risk management but to anything, because you can have a leader with great vision that can push for a policy, but policy means very little if you don't have the organization aligned and working to implement that policy in a consistent and sustainable fashion. So there's a whole host of factors that have to come together, and I have always maintained that enterprise risk management is just as much about organizational change management as it is about risk management. And so all the kinds of challenges that it takes to get the organization understanding, motivated, with the right tools, and finally willing to continue that journey through the right incentives and ongoing processes is critical. So that is typically not a one-month or a one-year proposition. That is a long-term proposition, but that should not keep anyone from starting down that journey. But it is a journey. It's not a quick fix.
And Doug, just to keep with you, risk emanates from both outside and inside an organization. Given your perspective and all the work you've done both on this report and for your book, do you handle externally and internally generated risk the same way? And why do they require maybe possibly different responses?
Well, to some degree, as I indicated earlier, they are the same, because the underlying principles of risk management to identify the risk, to assess it, to treat it, and so on are universal. That having been said, your ability to impact that risk can vary greatly if it's to the degree that it's outside of your control. For example, the risk of not having sufficient budget downstream a year from now or 5 years from now is not largely within the control of federal agencies, because it begins with the agency, of course, but it has to go through the entire budgeting process, and finally it has to go through Congress. And while we can all influence Congress to some degree through not by lobbying but through educating, nevertheless, we are dependent upon what comes back downhill to the organization. So you don't have the same degree of ability to control that risk that you do inside the organization.
So, Tom, to what extent do budget cuts increase the risk confronting agencies? In both private and public sector, when does major risk materialize?
The problem with budget cuts is that very often they're not well thought out.
Okay.
And very often an agency will be under intense pressure to pretend they can do more with less when maybe they can't. Sometimes you can do more with less, but very often you can't cover the same waterfront without budget resources that you could cover with budget resources. So if the fundamental question that we ask in enterprise risk management is, what are the major risks that could prevent our agency from achieving its mission or objectives? When you have budget cuts, the question is, with less resources, what are the major risks? And very often, the answers are different. Mm-hmm. One may not be able to change, to build on Doug's example just now, one may not be able to change the extent of a budget cut, but you may be able to do risk management to cope better with a budget cut. And I'm thinking of the Department of Homeland Security and the former Undersecretary for Management, who basically with large acquisitions said, you know, this acquisition might have a 5-year time horizon. We want to make sure if funding is cut in year 3 that we get something for it. Mm-hmm. So they designed the acquisition in modules so that if funding were cut, not the ones asking for it, you still have something to show for this massive expenditure of funds rather than having nothing, which was too frequently the case.
And just looking at public and private entities. When does risk materialize? Is there certain conditions in place around there? Sorry.
The hardest issue to deal with is timing. You can assess the vulnerabilities, and sometimes you're lucky, and sometimes you're not lucky. And timing is something, and I saw this, of course, studying the financial crisis. Timing is something you can't quite tell when that event will occur that will precipitate the risk that creates a fundamental problem for you.
So, Tom, what is the value of a risk management focus, and how can the effective use of risk management strategies improve senior leadership decision making?
Well, the whole point of risk management, enterprise risk management in particular, is that decision makers consider both the rewards and the risks of any decision. In other words, there's an upside, and very often you have enthusiasts that want to go forward and do something. One needs to also listen to the downside, and you need to have a trade-off between the two. So I'll give you an example from the financial crisis. We interviewed one of the firms that successfully navigated the crisis, and we walked out of their Taj Mahal, and my minder made sure I didn't go off and do other informal interviews after we interviewed the CEO, and said, let's go for coffee. And then he said, you know, so-and-so, the CEO, he asks my opinion on major risks all the time. And then he got a funny look on his face, and he said, but he asks 200 other people too. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a CEO who is going to have a real sense. Besides, they had really good information systems to support analysis of risks and rewards. But that's going to be a CEO who has a real sense of the contours of a good decision. Mm-hmm. And the risks that hurt you most, usually, are the ones you don't see. You haven't thought about.
So decisions whether to undertake an initiative or to continue ongoing activities involve risks and rewards, as you pointed out in your report. How can risk management act as a tool to strengthen decision making?
In my view, one of the important functions of enterprise risk management is to ensure the flow of communications to the decision maker. They need to have the information that is directly relevant to the decision they want to make. And that means communications up and down the hierarchy, also across the silos, to bring the powerful business unit heads into the conversation, to be sure the decision maker knows everything that they need to know. And again, interviewing the chief of the mortgage desk at one of the successful financial firms, who they had lost money for 10 days in a row when their model said they should have made money. Uh-huh. And immediately this guy surfaces the warning to top management. People come down, start looking over his shoulder, people he had never seen before from top management. And so I asked him, well, why did you do this? He said, part of my job is to make sure that the people I work for know what they need to know. Uh-huh. That's an organizational culture that allows that flow of communication.
Tom, as a follow-up, how can risk management be a tool for improving information flow?
Sometimes agency leaders are too out of touch with what's going on. Washington may not know what's going on in the field. Political appointees may not understand what's going on at the civil servant level. And what I've seen in organizations is that you may have a problem with what I call a layer of cork. That when I interview somebody in the middle of the organization, they say, oh, here's this issue. I'm really trying to surface it. But whenever they surface it, it hits a layer of cork and top management never sees it. So what enterprise risk management does is it's a way to let your frontline employee surface the issue. And by the way, surface it as we do business this way, not surface it as it's an act of personal courage to bring bad news to the boss. And if you can do that, then your organization starts to build towards a culture where the decision makers can make good risk-reward trade-offs.
What is enterprise risk management? We will explore this question and so much more on our special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors returns.